Hi, this is Lauren Hunt with another episode of the Guitar Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again. This is episode number 17, as I've recorded on my MacBook Pro using Soundtrack Pro and the Mac's built-in microphone. To those of you new to the Guitar Podcast, I want you to know that what I talk about here is my own opinion from my experience with guitars, amps, effects, and so on. Please chime in with comments and questions to my email at info@theguitarpodcast.net, and feel free also to go on Facebook and look for the Guitar Podcast on Facebook. You'll see the black and white logo that has the outline of a great electric guitar and my favorite kind of electric guitar, and the words Guitar Podcast. Get on there and check out show notes and links and so on from things to talk about here, and feel free to chime in and just, you know, use that as kind of a feedback forum for us. Hope you join us. Well, this week I want to talk about a few different things. First off, I don't want to rant or complain too much, but something I don't quite understand is I've seen on several guitar magazines, in several guitar magazines, and on the cover of a few about Ozzy's new guitar player and all the great guitar players he's played with before, and they mention Tony Iommi, Randy Rhoads, and Zakk Wylde, and his new guy. But they don't mention Jake E. Lee. And I thought perhaps that was just one magazine that was leaving him out. And then I looked at a few others, and he was left out in the title as well. No, I did not read the articles nor buy the magazines. I was a bit put off by that. So I don't quite understand why he would be left off, because all you have to do is listen to Bark at the Moon and Ultimate Sin. The things he did on Ultimate Sin were just amazing. But, and then, you know, what he did after with Badlands is really cool too. But we want to limit this to his work with Ozzy. I really don't understand why he would not be listed there. If you could fill me in on that, that'd be great. I mean, he was a fantastic guitar player with Ozzy, and I don't get it. So, anyway, if you could shed some light, perhaps you read the article, maybe they explained, but kind of holding a grudge against those particular magazines right now for their omission of the great Jake E. Lee. Anyway, as I want to move on now and talk about, you know, the main subject, get off my soapbox rant and rave and all that good stuff. So this week I want to talk about basses and why I don't talk about basses. Somebody talked to me last week about why I don't talk about basses on the podcast, and it wasn't a complaint. It was just, hey, you know, I get a lot of good stuff out of it, but hey, I'd love to hear you talk about basses and such. Now, I believe in an earlier episode I talked about when I first started teaching guitar, and how when I started teaching, I was just focused on electric guitar and acoustic guitar, and I thought that was all I would teach. And I saw on my student board once, my first week or so, I had a bass student. And I said, why do I have a bass student on my schedule? And they said, well, you can teach him bass. You can teach him basics of bass. I said, but I'm not a bass player. And they said, well, you're good enough to teach guitar. You're good enough to teach him bass. And I just didn't feel right about that. It just didn't sit right with me, because sure, I could teach him some of the mechanisms of, you know, moving your fingers on the bass to make notes and things like that. But to really become a bass player and to think like a bass player, I think you need to be a bass player to teach that aspect of playing bass. And I didn't have that. And I still don't think I really have that. I haven't spent the time and dedication towards playing bass to pull that off. So, you know, I never felt quite right about that. But I did teach some bass players, got them up to a point where I was, and eventually I just said, hey, you need to work out something with the other teacher here who is a bass player and, or whatever, and or send them on their merry way to someone who is 100% a bass guitar teacher who would serve them much better. You know, I couldn't be honest with myself and just keep teaching them and me learning and just it wasn't right to me. So it's part of why I don't talk about basses extensively on the guitar podcast. Well, once it's called the guitar podcast and not the bass podcast, but I do know a little bit about basses. The thing is, part of the reason why I don't talk about basses on here is it goes back to that whole thing about me teaching bass. I don't have the experience that a veteran bass player would have to really guide somebody in or really talk about bass too terribly much to make you you know, really get a whole lot out of it. But with that said, now I'm going to just start jabbering on and on about what I know about basses and how I would approach it if I had a cool bass and amp rig and all that stuff, and how, you know, kind of what I would envision if, say, hey, somebody said, Lauren, we really need a bass player, you know, in like 2 months we need to start doing shows and we need you to play bass. Why me? But, you know, I don't know, this is just my hypothetical situation, and you're listening, so it is what it is, right? I am sure that within a month or two, I could be fairly proficient with a bass. I'm not talking like Stu Hamm or anything like that, or these really great bass players. I think I could be a serviceable bass player within a couple months, just because of my experience with guitars and playing around with basses and enjoying playing bass a bit, and their approach to how they lock up with a drummer in the groove. But I would say that I would start with going back to a really, you know, the amp. I think it was episode 9 was talking about the amp or the guitar first. I would find a good amp that I could play a bunch of different basses on and have a really consistent tone, a really nice sound. And there's an amp company that it really seems to excel at bass amps. The first one that comes to mind is Ampeg. That they, you know, almost every Ampeg I've ever played through or heard somebody play through, it was tube, of course, sounded great, just amazing. It wasn't all clangy or sloppy or slappy or whatever. I don't know what the proper word for it is, but it was a nice, smooth bass tone, and that'd be what I would be looking for. My favorite bass sounds are the bass players that I play with the most that have that sound. I like the best, that nice where the sound, when the note sounds like boo, boo. I think bass serves a purpose, and that's how I would approach bass, in a way that is somewhat dynamic in some ways, but very subtle, and just holds that bottom end really nice. So I would probably look for, I don't know, Fender would make a good bass amp. But I think, Mesa Boogie makes some good bass amps too. But see, that's just it. I don't know. I haven't done enough research. Don't have the background in bass. But I'd say I'd probably be off to a really good start in looking at Ampegs and going around to different stores and talking to their bass experts there. And just letting my ear guide me to the right amp. And again, I'm kind of old school when it would come to picking out a bass, the actual bass guitar. I would want something, more than likely, I wouldn't want a Warwick. I mean, those are awesome guitars. They're beautiful, and I've played them, and it's just like I can play anything I want to on those. It's like I can almost play a guitar solo on it. They're so amazing. There are several basses that I've played that are like that, but I really, really like the looks of a Fender Precision bass. An old one, Sunburst, beat up, that would be awesome. I don't know why. I just like the looks of that. And it goes back to that whole thing. If you don't like the way it looks, you're not going to play it. So that would be a starting point for me, but I would want to play a bunch of different bases. I played an Olympic a long time ago. The thing weighed like 40 pounds, but it played great, sounded great, felt great. I just thought it was so cool. And it was kind of unique because not everybody knows about Olympic bases other than, you know, like diehard bass players or just Olympic fans. Anyway, those are really cool guitars. I don't see them very often. The people I've only known 3 people to own one, and they're super cool. But that's pretty much where I would go there. I know the jazz bass, the Fender jazz bass, is really good. A lot of people use that. Something about that offset body just doesn't sit right with me. That's just me, though. I'm sure it's probably a better bass than the P bass. Probably more features, better playability. Sometimes I go by the looks. And I would want to be fairly simple. I don't know that I'd want a whole lot of tonal options with my bass. Especially if I am somewhat intermediate level. I think walking into it with my guitar experience, I would probably be somewhat intermediate level. Trying to move into that, higher end level of capability. Now, I'm not going to do the slapping and popping and all that stuff or tapping that say like a Les Claypool would do, or these really super awesome bass players that just amaze me. Go on YouTube and watch these guys. It's just insane. But you know, I would keep my rig fairly simple, and I've looked at some pedal boards that bass players have been using, and a lot of times, you know, I feel really bad for bass players whenever I see them. And the sound man just says, "Yeah, just plug directly into the board. We'll take care of you from there." I understand why they do it and all that, but a bass player has less control over things when they do that. And I've seen bass players have a compression pedal on their board, of course, a tuner. I usually, whenever those bass players are plugged directly into the house, they're unplugging from their direct box and going, "Hey man, can I plug into your pedal board and tune up?" So say in between songs, if they think they're a little bit out, how are they going to get back in without having the tuning, you know, having a tuner pedal in their signal chain? I mean, sure, they could have one there and then have one before it goes into the direct box. That's conceivable. You know, there's always a way around it. I think it'd be essential to have a tuner pedal on your pedal board and a compressor. And amazingly enough, I saw a guy have a delay on his pedal board for his bass. I'm not sure that I would need that. I don't know if I would need a compressor. I've seen bass overdrives and bass wahs. I wouldn't go there just yet. That's just me if I were building my first bass rig. So, Ampeg amp, Fender P bass, and a tuning pedal and probably a compression pedal. Maybe an EQ pedal. I don't know. Maybe just to do something a little more, to give a little more punch or just a little bit different tone or something. Say I want to boost the mids on it. I don't know. To make it stand out more at a certain point in a song where it needs that from the bass. But that's basically my point of view from a lifelong guitar player's perspective on bass. And I'm saying this so that you understand the respect I have for bass players, because I think that they've been shortchanged over the years. If a bass player messes up, everybody knows. Just like the drummer. If the drummer messes up, it's like, what happened there? Me as a lead guitar player, you know, a lot of times I'm not playing like straight chords and stuff. You know, if I mess up chords like that, you know, you might notice, but you very well may not. Now, whenever I'm playing lead stuff and just kind of, you know, textures over chords, if I mess up, more than likely, nobody's going to know unless I really hit a sour one. and delays on, and it repeats that sour note a couple times. It's like, oops, 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 oops. that's no fun. Hey, it's happened. Trust me. But I remember those times that it's happened. But yeah, if a bass player messes up, has one of those sour notes, the bass guitar, that the bottom end just penetrates everything in the house, every fiber in the house. So everything shifts on that bass. So very important to a band. And if they hit a wrong note, you know, it's going to stand out. So, and if they're off with the drummer, if the drummer and the bass player aren't on the same page, riding in that same groove, it's just not going to be tight. It's just not going to be right. And that's very important. And I'm not saying that I could just jump in there and do it, because I certainly can't. It would take me, well, one, it would take me some time just to ramp up on my bass skills. I see a lot of bass players play with picks, and see some play with their first two fingers, index and middle finger, on their picking hand. Me, you know how I want that note to be a real smooth note from the beginning to the end. I don't want a heart attack at the beginning of the note, where it has a hard strike at the beginning of the note, and then it fades at the end. I want it to be fairly smooth. I mean, sure, at the beginning it's gonna be have more attack, but I don't want that heavy attack that a pick would have. So, me personally, I would keep my fingernails really short on my right hand, those two fingers, and use those two fingers to play the bass and not use a pick. I was thinking the other day when I was coming up with the show notes for this that I would, you know, if I were playing really fast speed metal or something like that, or thrash, that, yeah, I'd probably use a pick. I'm starting to think that I may not. That if I were to go to that, I would want to have the skill that I could build up those two fingers speed to where I could really cruise and I could play as fast as I needed. 32nd, maybe even 64th notes with just those two fingers. It may be that I'd incorporate the ring finger in it if I got that good. But this is kind of a pipe dream for me that I'm, you know, it probably will never happen for me because I'm not going to do it. You know, I'm more than likely not going to pick up a bass and build a rig and do that. But, you know, it's pretty much the way, in my mind, for a long, long time, I have envisioned that if I were to pick up bass and start going that direction, that's how I would approach it. And not use a pick, I'd just use my fingers and try to keep that note nice and smooth. I'm guessing then if I were playing speed metal and not, say, something like country or blues or any of your rock standards or rhythm and blues, old-time rhythm and blues or whatever, that if I were playing something more like speed metal or thrash, that perhaps I would want to have a little more attack or a different type of a tone from my bass than a nice smooth, but that it would have to have a little more precise note. Probably not going to play in a thrash band anytime soon. Anyway, that's just where I'm coming from. You know, and I would always let my ear tell me what to do. If it, you know, hey, the P bass, it looks really cool, and I love the way it feels and everything, you know, it's not sounding right. And the ultimate goal is for what I'm playing to be pleasing to the listener and to the other players in the band. Say, yeah, that sounds good. And if it turns out to be a jazz bass or an alembic or, you know, anything else, who knows, it could be one of those old Gibson SG type basses. I don't know. I've heard good things about those, though. I've read good things about those. Those pickups are amazing. So, that's really all I have to say about the bass. And if you have any questions about the bass, there may be something I didn't mention here. But anyway, I'm more than happy to talk about bass. I would certainly stick with a four-string bass. and not go with a 5-string bass or a 6-string bass. I would keep it fairly simple. I don't see the need for me to use anything more than 4 strings on a bass. I don't use a 7-string or an 8-string guitar. And I'm not talking about the one that Taylor, the 8-string guitar that Taylor has come up with. But I do have a 12-string, but that's different. You still approach it like a 6-string guitar. It just has octave strings and doubled up strings on the B and E. But yeah, I try to just keep it nice and simple, especially when I'm starting out playing bass. I don't know that I would ever go to a 5-string or a 6-string bass, or a fretless for that matter. I just don't want to work that hard to get that note just perfect like that. It just, I know there are guys who can. I've seen some guys play really well like that. And you can get some really cool sounds out of a fretless bass. So, that pretty well wraps it up for today's episode of the Guitar Podcast. Please chime in with comments and questions to info@theguitarpodcast.net. Or, jump on Facebook, find the Guitar Podcast, and like it. Start talking on there. Leave questions or comments, and periodically I'll have some links to other things just throughout the week, but typically I'll have links on there related to the episode I just released. You know, I may reply back to you either by email or on Facebook or on the show, like what I did today. I'm always glad to do this. I'm glad that everybody, I'm very thankful for everyone who listens to the podcast. And I think it's really cool that I see the audience growing and I get emails from you. It's really cool. I really dig it. This is Lauren Hunt signing off for the Guitar Podcast.